starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. Living with each other, 'cause the future will soon be in their hands. Watching the coast, they follow our steps. If we do right, I'm sure they'll understand.
Hello. And welcome to Spingola and Friends. It is Monday, January 5th, 2015. This is Deanna Spingola broadcasting from the frigid suburbs of Chicago. This radio program does not have any corporate sponsors. Therefore, we are free to discuss controversial topics that are not politically correct and those you might not hear on other programs. My website is spingola.com, where you will find information about my three books, the Ruling Elite series, as well as a timeline of book two and three. I have two guests today with me. However, I was not successful in calling them via Skype. I don't know what's going on with Skype this morning, but if they would please call in at 646-787-1915, then we will all be together. And so let me just post that to them. I did attempt to add them. Skype is sometimes, well, it's problematic, and it's unfortunate, but that is just the way it is. So if Thomas Goodrich and Kyle Hunt will call in, that will be just terrific. And let me just post the number to them so that they can call in, and then we'll have a program. Otherwise, you're just going to have me, which is going to be, well, rather boring, I'm afraid. So let me just have them call into the program. Let's see. Okay. All righty. I've posted the message to them in Skype, so hopefully they will see that message and call into the program. All righty. I mentioned that my website is spingola.com, where you will find information about my three books, the Ruling Elite series, as well as a timeline of book two and three. My new book will be coming out soon. It is entitled Screening Sandy Hook, Causes and Consequences. Please also visit the website of a friend and listener who has created and maintains the website, spingolaspeaks.wordpress.com. Okay, we do have I believe that's Thomas. Okay, let's just click him in. Is that you, Tom?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay, so we're still waiting for Kyle to call in. I don't know what happened to Skype today. I'm either an idiot or Skype is just giving me a hassle. Okay, we've got Kyle. So, Kyle, is that you?
It is me, yes.
Oh, bless your heart. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for calling into the program. Skype sometimes works terrific, and sometimes it's just a piece of garbage. And it is just not always very consistent. Kyle, I'm sure that you have found that Skype does have some inadequacies, correct?
Oh, yeah, definitely, especially after they were acquired by Microsoft.
Oh, well, That is a problem. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, it's almost as good as Windows 8.
Oh, yes. I refuse to go to Windows 8. But anyway, it's, the technology can be difficult because, well, they upgraded it recently, so it works totally different. And anyway, we're all together, and that's the important thing. All righty. My Twitter is twitter.com/Deanna Spingola. If you have questions during the program, please call in at 646-787-1915. We will also be taking questions and comments from the listeners via my email, comment@spingola.com, or from the chat room, spingola.chatango.com. My guests today are Thomas Goodrich, the author of numerous books, including Hailstorm, The Death of Nazi Germany, 1944 and 1947, and Kyle Hunt, who has recently released a trailer of a video based on Tom's book titled Hailstorm, The Rape of Germany. That if your trailer, if the movie, the video is as good as the trailer, I just cannot say enough good things. It's easy for me to be in tears, but honestly, at the end of watching just that 12-minute trailer, I was just so emotionally struck by the images that you put together. It's just amazing.
Well, thank you.
The artistry that you use, the images, the dialogue, of course, that Tom provided, is just remarkable. So what can our listeners do to help you get this completed so that you have the whole video? We need money, right?
Money isn't actually the most important thing at this point. And most people would be surprised I would say such a thing, you know, because everybody is always looking for money to fund these projects. But we already had a good fundraiser. And
okay.
If people do want to contribute, they can go over to hailstormdocumentary.com and they can reserve a DVD. There are a number of different packages if they want to help support the film. But right now, one of the most important things is that we get authentic voices for the film. In particular, German men and women of all different ages, if they would like to lend their voice to this film, those are the people that we're most in need of. Also looking for a few British men and a British woman, and could still use some American voices as well, just men though. And that is really one of the big things right now that we need is voice work, because Tom's book, Hailstorm, includes all of these eyewitness accounts. And I think it's very important that we give a voice to these accounts. Of course, there are some videos, eyewitness testimonies online that we will be including in the film. But some of these written testimonies that Tom includes in the book are just so powerful and so moving. And if we can get authentic accents along with them, it will really just make for a phenomenal presentation.
Indeed. That is one thing that was very authentic to me, is the fact that you did use German voices, and that certainly gave credibility and impact. We've had a lot of German people on the program. Unfortunately, two of them have passed away, one just recently, Hans Krampe and Gerhard, who passed away, probably a year and a half ago. They would have been great additions, but there are still plenty of German voices out there. I will certainly reach out and contact at least two male German voices that are two German people that I know pretty well, and see if they could contribute.
I think that a lot of Germans are still scared of lending their voice to a film like this because of the political persecution that they could face because the system that was that has been in place since World War II is ruthlessly hunting down any German that dares speak up. And it you know, us Americans have a little bit more freedom of speech, but it's just such a travesty. How many people are jailed in Germany for just questioning history? And hopefully we'll be able to you know, really start to give these people a voice, to give them the real history that they've been deprived of for so long. But hopefully more Germans will be willing to kind of stand up and be counted. And they don't need to use their real names. I'm just looking for their accents.
Okay. Tom, what is your feeling about, when did you start putting this this film together? How did this occur? Give us a little bit of history and how you happened to decide that you were going to do this. I think it's a wonderful idea. A lot of people simply will not read a book, okay? They're just not going to read a book. But they will watch a video. And so how did you happen to decide that you were going to do this project?
Well, Deanna, actually, I never did decide I was going to do it. It was all about Kyle Hunt. Kyle Hunt has had some experience in this. Tom Goodrich has not. Tom Goodrich would love to see this in cinema because, as you point out, yes, it's true. Most people don't read. Everyone, however, can watch and listen in a film, in a theater, in a studio, in their home. But most people, it's a fact, don't read. And I'd like the greatest possible audience. So when Kyle approached me on the cinematic potential for this film, of course I agreed. I think Kyle backed me up. I offered to do whatever it took. Unfortunately for the film, maybe, is that we have yet to find a better narration voice than mine. Now,
oh,
I am free, and I am available.
I think you're a good narrator.
Oh, boy, I grew up with great narrators. I know a good voice when I hear it. If you guys think I'm a good enough voice, that's okay with me. But I know there are plenty out there. So while Kyle is making his pitch there for more voice talent, and in fact, I think Kyle will back me up on this, if there's any Russian who's listening to our words right now,
wow,
and who is willing to offer their voice, because there are some points in this film that are we need some Russian voice talent. But I'll say this, Kyle, and I'll stick with it to the bitter end as long as I'm wanted. But if anyone's listening and they think they've got a voice that could be a good narration voice with all the drama and all the pathos and all the sadness and all the horror that this film encompasses, please get a hold of Deanna or get a hold of Kyle and send us a clip of your voice. We can send you some device that you can actually make a recording and send it back to Kyle, because I personally think this film deserves only the best, and I'm not a professionally trained speaker. So, but with that said, this is all Kyle Hunt's. Kyle has done 99% of the work in this, and he continues to do it. All Tom Goodrich has done is read some of the script for Kyle. So all credit goes to Kyle, and hopefully all accolades go to Kyle when the film is finally finished. I believe that, number one, Kyle is an artist. I believe he has it in his blood. And I think that is, almost as important in a film as your love of the truth, your love of honesty, and your love of justice. So Kyle has all these ingredients, but still, this is very hard work. I think Kyle will agree. This is making a movie. This is not, writing a book is tough enough, but I can't imagine making a movie, so I think the movie is in good hands. And the good news is Kyle is not trying to push this through some arbitrary deadline. He's going to, when this film is finally released, it will be because it's as good as we can make it. Wouldn't you agree, Kyle?
Oh, yes. And Tom is being very modest here. I think he's a perfect narrator. I'm very attached to his voice with the film.
Me
I think
too.
It works perfectly. And Tom has done much more than just read the lines. He's helped me put together the whole script that we have for the film. Basically, we had to condense his book down into a script for about a 90-minute film. So that's pretty tough to cut out all of these very compelling sections and try to get really down to the heart of the matter. And it's been really tough, actually, trying to find the material to show along with this with the narration, it's amazing just how little of it actually exists. You know, scenes, video clips, photos of some of these atrocities. I'm very surprised, actually, what I have been able to dig up that's still available out there, such as the scenes of Nemersdorf, when the Germans recaptured Nemersdorf and they were documenting the slaughter that took place there after the Soviets had invaded. And that's just one example, but the Allies obviously did not want these scenes to be getting out to the general public. So if they did record them at all, a lot of times I think that they were hidden, suppressed, or just destroyed. So it's going to be something quite unique when people view this film, because they will be coming across a material that they might have heard about before by listening to Tom Goodrich or reading his book, but they'll be seeing some things that I can guarantee that they've never seen before in their lives. Definitely not
Indeed.
On the History Channel.
Indeed. That's what was so impactful to me when I was watching this. I thought, where in heaven's name did they get these images? Because certainly they are not widespread. And getting back to Tom's voice. Tom has, in as much as he wrote the book, and I know that when you write a book, you put your heart and your soul into the research. And so when Tom is narrating the things that he has written, he puts his heart, you know, the feeling into what he has already lived in the writing of it. So I just think that it's really great that Tom is the narrator. I really do. Certainly, you don't have the perfect narration voice, but you have the perfect heart to do this.
Mm-hmm. Well, wouldn't it be nice, though, if someone listening to us had both those ingredients, not only the sense of righteous indignation that something like this
yes.
was done, and then projected back on the losers. The victors would commit all these crimes and then turn right around with the power of the press and project the crimes back upon the victims. That is one of the greatest abominations in world history, quite honestly. To
mm-hmm.
not only defeat these people, but to run them through for the next few years, basically the torture, the rapes, the massacres, the starvation, and so on. And then have the guts, the gall, to turn right around and convict them at Nuremberg and other places, and to this very day on TV, in books, convict them of doing the atrocities. You know, Deanna, if I had the proper voice for this, the proper voice would go through the entire gamut of emotions. It would go from sadness to outrage to sorrow, to the sorrow of the depth of which we've never even thought of, the sorrow of what these people went through. That's where I think a more professional voice comes in, because I got to tell you, at points I'm reading this, I know this story so well, as only one who researched the book and rewrote it time and time again. And so we're calling upon a really unique individual who could go through all this and not be destroyed by it. We're not talking about I think Cal will agree with me. There is nothing in this. It's going to be one of the most depressing documentary films ever made, because there are no happy moments. There is no joy. There is nothing. There's not even a hint at the end of the book or the movie to suggest that there's a better day ahead. Not at all. These crimes were committed by our fathers and our grandfathers that we have anointed the greatest generation. And nothing could be further from the truth. As I've said before on your program and other programs, not the greatest generation, not even a good generation, the worst generation that could go off and do such terrible atrocities, all based upon propaganda, too.
Indeed.
And so To find someone, God, if it's too bad that that some American who's had an epiphany after the war isn't available for this. I know it would be probably not the best voice, but to throw themselves into this and say, well, yes, I did some terrible things, but I didn't know any better. Well, whatever. I agree with you, Deanna. That's, Kyle is doing a great job on this, and Kyle's going through exactly what Tom Gritter went through. He's doing the work is so hard to find clips, first of all, that accurately depict what the words are saying. But then when you find them, you've got to be a dexterous editor. You have to know when to fold and when to hold. You've got to know what to cut and what to leave and what works, what doesn't. You don't want to be repetitive. You don't want to say the same thing over and over again. That goes with the music. At some point, you know, that becomes sing-songy, monotonous. And so you've got to be on call, on duty, every step of the way with this film. A 90-minute film. What are you talking about right now, Kyle? Is this the fourth or fifth month you've been at this for a 90-minute film? But I think Kyle will agree, though, that the response from other people has been tremendous. There's been
It's been hard going through these scenes over and over and over.
Yeah.
First it was
yeah.
the words, having to go through these words over and over as we refine the script, and then to go through hearing you read about it, read the quotations, and then seeing the images over and over. Because when you're editing, let's say just 1 minute of film, people don't realize how many hours 1 minute of film actually takes. And it's a lot of work, and it's emotionally draining as well when you're just sitting at your computer for hours on end dealing with this material. It's hard to take a break from that and not have the lingering effects, the lingering emotional scar basically left upon you.
You never become indifferent, do you, Kyle? Nor do I. I never become indifferent. I could sit down and read this book again, which I would hope not to do. But as many times as I've read it and know it by heart, I still never become indifferent. And I know it's the same way with you. You may get tired, and it may get to, you know, it may start to wear you down. But as you mentioned, the scars stay there. And that's the real downside of this, is writing about such horrible stuff, or in your case, making the film, and trying to become normal afterwards.
I don't think that you can become normal after you have watched something like this or read something like this. I think it will always be an impact emotionally. I mean, just watching the trailer, I was just, well, and I do tear up very easily. I admit it. But listening to the words, listening to you, Tom, read the words and seeing these images, and honestly, I don't know how you found them, Kyle. It's amazing, and how you put it together so artfully, so tastefully, as tastefully as one could do with such horrendous images. It's probably the most emotionally draining experience I've ever had. And it took me the entire day. Well, no, I still haven't gotten over it, obviously. And I hope that, if you make a 90-minute presentation, anybody that watches this will never ever again look at World War II in the same way ever again, ever.
Now, Deanna, there are a number of people out there in the comments of the different articles where they posted this video and on the YouTube itself, people saying, I can't watch this. You know, I know the material. I just can't watch it. I wouldn't be able to watch the whole thing. Do you have any words to them to kind of encourage them that they need to watch it, that it's not it's not maybe as bad as they think in some ways, although it is very emotionally draining and very, very sad. I feel like they're doing themselves a disservice by not going through this.
Kyle, let me throw something in there. Let me interject here. You sent me for my to pass by me the Western Front section the other day,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to come right up front and tell you I didn't watch it, and I'm probably not going to watch it because I know what's coming in that thing, and I know how horrible it is. And so, you know, in that sense, you're absolutely right. This may be something many people cannot watch, quite honestly. That's the price we have to pay to get the truth out there. But on the other hand, I've said this to Deanna before, and I'll say it to you, Kyle. Yes, you don't have the film for much of this stuff, and all I can say is I'm glad we don't, because some of the stuff, man, can you imagine what that would look like? In the film, it's going to have to be basically the music carrying the words along what's being said, because to show people actually being tortured, having their testicles smashed, or having people crawling around on all fours eating, I'm not going to go into too much of this detail, but you know what I'm talking about, the Jewish torture prisons in Poland. You know where I'm going with this, Kyle. I'm not going to describe that. If we had that terrible stuff, I think we'd all lose our minds. So some of this stuff, it's probably best that you will never find that junk.
Mm-hmm.
But let me also say this, why it was important in the book to put this stuff down, in the words of the people themselves, by the way, is because I've said this before, if I'm tortured to death, it's not just good enough to say Tom Goodrich is tortured to death. I would like to know in my dying spasm that the entire world knew how I was tortured to death, knew how I was tortured to death, down to every last detail. I think it's very important, not only to know how I died, but to know how and who did it. In other words, the sadistic evil of someone who could do such things. I think it's important that they know that, the reader, that is, or in this case, the movie viewer. There are things that, let's face it, there are things in the world we just don't want to see. Some bold or strong-stomached people will, and bless them, because they need to know what happened and what probably could still happen, what could still happen in the future, what may be happening right now in the Middle East, because we didn't learn from World War II, because we never had a chance to learn from it. There were no books out there. There were no movies. So this is the first attempt to correct history and show people what happened, how it happened, and by whom it happened, and to whom, of course, and why it's still going on to this very day, and why it probably will continue to go on until we learn from it and stop it. But back to the graphic nature of the movie, that's just the way it is. We cannot pull any punches from such a movie. That's to do a disservice to everyone who was tortured to death or raped to death or some of the other bestial atrocities that were committed on these people.
I think.
Go ahead,
Tom.
I know there are still films out there that are probably deep in the vaults of the National Archives or the Library of Congress that would show, for instance, nose cone views, film of American pilots gunning down anything that moved in Germany in the last months of the war, called the Targets of Opportunity. In other words,
right. This
is the U.S. and Britain's attempt to stop anything moving in Germany, food, medicine, people. They were shooting anything, everything. I can vividly remember one image, one film clip that I'd seen as a child. And it showed, I think it was an American pilot in a Mustang, gunning down a farmer in the field with his horse. And I never saw that ever again. On the same token, I remember some scenes that I'd seen earlier, the war in Japan. And it was the very same thing, shooting Japanese that were in the water, begging for surrender, that their boat had been sunk, and the Americans open up on them with machine guns from the ship, shooting them in the head and just killing them. I mean, out at sea, even worse things. So they're out there, but like Kyle said, maybe they've been destroyed by now, but certainly they haven't seen the light of day for many decades now. But that, those things are even, that's tough for me to watch. I wouldn't watch that again either if it was out there, of a pilot dashing in, flying low, and shooting a farmer who's trying to plow his field with a horse, or kids in the playground, or school buses, or women on bicycles. There's one account in the book that we don't have in the movie of a woman trying to buy some bread on her bicycle, being hounded by the pilots trying to kill her. That's the targets of opportunity. But Kyle will agree with me, I'm sure, that there are things that the movie, a 90-minute movie, can never cover. And there's no way. I mean, it's just impossible. You'd have to make this such a long thing that, I do think the message can get out in 90 minutes. So, and obviously, Kyle does, too.
Exactly. I think that, and somebody in the chat room says, it is a moral responsibility to watch this film. And I believe that the American people, the taxpayer dollars that paid for this mass inhumane slaughter, need to watch what their taxpayer dollars paid for. They need to own this atrocity. And they need to own it by watching it and seeing what the Allies did to a country that did not want the war, tried to prevent the war, did everything that they could to hold off the invaders. They have a moral obligation to watch this. And if these same Americans can watch the garbage on television, the police programs that show crimes being committed, and they are desensitized, but not desensitized because they know that, well, that's just acting. Well, what happened in Germany against the German citizens was not play acting. It was the real thing. And they have a moral obligation to watch this and to own it, and then to feel the sorrow that they need to feel, that any of their ancestors, their fathers, their uncles, their grandfathers participated in. They need to own this. Absolutely, they need to own this. We all do.
I agree with you. There needs to be a collective reckoning. We need to, as one people, basically apologize. That's not much, but it's a start. And basically apologize not only for the atrocities that we committed. And some people who are listening for the first time may think that we're talking about isolated events that were anonymous,
no,
that were never sponsored by the overall Allied authorities. We're not talking about that. We're talking about a concerted effort to destroy Germany and its people. And in the process, destroy them as sadistically and viciously as they possibly can. I mean,
exactly.
If it wasn't for the ugly, sadistic, vile nature that occurred in the last months of the war and the immediate post-war years, if it was just simply defeat, in other words, grinding a nation into the ground and defeating it, that would be terrible enough. But this is not that. This is not that at all. This is a sadistic, vicious, depraved, evil,
psychopathic, total
psychopathic
war.
Yes, it is. Because, you know, you might think that in the movie or the book, things would have gotten better as the book progressed along or the movie progressed. It doesn't. It gets worse. And, you know, we have to this very day, Germans are still suffering from this projected crime that was committed against them to this very day. That's how thorough this savagery was. But I agree with you. You say that it's a moral responsibility to understand what happened, what our fathers and grandfathers did, what they did so willy-nilly. They went over with all the propaganda in their head, and it was so easy for an 18-year-old to rape a woman, a German woman, because these were terrible people. These were evil Nazis. It was easy to murder old men and boys who were marching toward them in the Home Guard, trying to surrender, trying to continue with life, it's an easy thing to mow them down. Just blow them away, kill them, shoot them all, torment them after you've beaten them half to death, and then kill them. And this is what went on. This is not the the John Wayne approach to making movies. This is the way it really played out in both Germany and Japan, by the way. And yes, we start with understanding what happened and hopefully being sorry for what happened in our name. And then after that, there comes the redemption. We must, as a nation, apologize at some point. And it's going to happen. I guarantee you that's going to happen. What was done in our name and continues to this very day. And then this business of Germany paying Israel reparations has got to stop. Germany has paid trillions of dollars to Israel, just like the United States. Now, go figure. Germany, the defeated nation that passed anti-Jewish laws in the 30s and during the war, they are paying for what was projected on them, the trillions of dollars in reparations to Israel. The United States supposedly won that war for Israel, or for Jewish world interests, and they're still paying, right now, billions every year. You need jets, you need planes, you need tanks, you got them. You need money, you got that too. You need the support of the American Congress, hey, you've had that for decades. You've got everything, and it's still not good enough. You still must come and fight our wars, says Israel. So this crap has got to stop, or we're going to continue to make these same mistakes in the future as we're making right now in the Middle East. And with this new attempt in the Ukraine and Russia trying to stoke World War III so that if we can occupy Russia, Israel can slip in the back door and steal all of the oil fields from Syria and Iran. That's understood by some of us, maybe not the entire world. This has got to stop, this perpetual war. I'm getting off the subject, I know, but still, that's where this trail ends. We cannot bring back the dead people, the raped women, the tortured people that were drowned in latrines, filthy latrines, just because they were Germans at the end of the war. We can't bring these people back, and bless their hearts, we cannot even make it better for the ones who have died psychologically that perhaps are still alive today. But we can stop it from happening again and again and again and again. And eventually it's, even if you don't care about what happens to other people, you better care about what happens to yourself, because we're on the menu too, by the way.
Exactly. If they can do it there, they can do it anywhere. Anywhere in the world. And that's what they are doing.
Yes, it's about what's doing, doing what is proper, what is right and just for the past, for the memory, for history. But it's also about preventing this happening to anybody in the future. Us, our kids, their kids. It's got to stop. And,
exactly.
Kyle Hunt is doing his bit, by the way, I meant to say. And so are you, Deanna, by just giving us a platform to talk and for people like me to spout off on the soapbox. Without people like you, nobody would know about me or Kyle Hunt. So I'll give you credit.
I'm just a radio host that wants to get the truth out about a number of things. And the wars that I have studied, it's all about slaughter. It's about not between military people, but against civilian populations. It's about total warfare, which has absolutely nothing to do with military men. It used to be that war was fought on a battlefield, a regular formal battlefield, and the men would fight against the men. But since World War, since the so-called Civil War, it has been about destroying populations, about destroying civilian populations, about destroying production, about the food production, the children, the old the women, the old men, the elderly, the animals, destroying the land, destroying any possibility that they could possibly resurrect or rebuild. And yet Germany, despite what was done to them, their characteristics, their values have given them the power to rebuild that country against all odds, in spite of them having to pay the reparations. So there is something behind all of this, that they could do this, that they had the power to do this, despite the fact that they're paying all these reparations. And look at the guilt that that other ethnic groups have attempted to put upon the American people. And yet Germany has literally remained silent. They are not coming to America. They are not saying, hey, look what you did to us. They are standing up like men, like women, and they are rebuilding. They are some of the most courageous, good people that I know.
Mm-hmm. I think Kyle will back you up on that.
And I think it's very promising to see that the German people are on their feet, and are standing up for themselves, particularly in Dresden with these marches that are going on, which are against immigration. You know, the population replacement program that is in place there. But I think it's something deeper, and it's very symbolic that's taking place in Dresden. That the firebombing, the terror bombing that took place in Germany is just one of the many horrific aspects that we'll be discussing in this documentary. And you could do a 2-hour documentary just on the terror bombing alone, but we're going to be covering it in 20 minutes, perhaps. The Rhein-Meadow death camps, Eisenhower's death camps, that might take 10 to 12 minutes. And you've done whole programs on this. So hopefully this documentary will give a broad overview, a graphic overview for people, and get them interested in these subjects so they can learn the full truth by coming to programs such as yours, Deanna, and really getting the, getting the details. And I agree with Tom that this information is so needed because we don't want to repeat the mistakes of history. And if we are ignorant to the truth about what happens when this kind of war is unleashed upon the world, then we're going to be suffering a similar fate.
Indeed. I remember in a history class in high school, or I don't know, grammar school, that we study history so that we do not repeat it. And yet it is repeated repeatedly. And when you talk about Dresden, if you know the history of Dresden and why they attacked Dresden, it was retribution, because it was in Dresden that the first anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish meeting was held, where people came from several different countries in Europe and said, hey, wait a minute, things are just not going right in Europe. And we have got to do something to save ourselves. And so the entire attack on Dresden was retribution against that earlier meeting in 1882, September 11th and 12th in 1882. And so when you think about that, and you think about what kind of people would remember from generation to generation and then take retribution against people who had absolutely no part in that meeting, but they went in and they went after the schools, they went after the hospitals, and Dresden was not a military center. It was a center that they thought it was a community where people felt safe because there was no military facilities. And many of the people were refugees in Dresden. They went there because they felt it was safe. And I'm sure that the Allies knew that. They knew exactly what they were doing. And it's beyond belief that anybody could retain that kind of hatred, and to do something to the culture, to destroy buildings that had been in existence for so many generations. Oh my gosh, what kind of psychopathic people would do such a dreadful thing, to take out history? But then they're doing it, as you say, in the Middle East. They have first of all, when you want to destroy a people, the first thing you destroy is their culture and their history, their sense of self, their sense of being, their sense of who they were and their dreams, their hopes. And that is what they're doing in the Middle East. That is what they attempted to do in Germany, is to destroy that identity.
You know, I hope that Paul Eisen's effort, Jews for Justice for Germans, picks up a little bit more support from the Jewish community. I think his proposals are pretty good.
Oh,
basically, repaying all of that money and perhaps more that Germany was forced to give to Israel and making reparations. I think that Jews have pretty much doubled down on their Holocaust industry and just pushing forward with this narrative, even though many of them know it to be a lie. And I think one of the reasons is that they are under the impression that if the truth comes out that they lied about the Holocaust, that they covered up these crimes that were committed against Germany, that maybe a real Holocaust would ensue. But I think that actually getting the truth out there is the only way for us to be able to really heal, to be able to move into a better world going forward. And they're obviously scared of this truth because it condemns them. You know, it really shows them to be the villains of the 20th century. And, of course, then you realize that they were in control of the 20th century. You realize that they're pushing us towards a similar fate in the 21st century.
Kyle, you're right on. You're spot on. You're spot on with that. Number one, I can almost, nobody can guarantee everything, but if only, as you mentioned, I think it's a very good thing this man is doing. His name is Paul Eisner?
Eisen.
Paul Eisen.
I think it's a wonderful thing he's doing. And, you know, we have got the great capacity to forgive, even something as hideous as this we're talking about now, this hellstorm in Germany. But first, somebody has to come forth and say, hey, we did make a terrible mistake. It was an awful thing we did. And if they could just go that far, and yes, there is a tremendous, in myself there is, I don't know about everybody else, but a capacity to even forgive something like that. I'm not talking about religion. I'm not talking about Christianity. I'm talking about for two people to get together and say it was awful, but the times were different. And you have to have been there, perhaps, to understand what happened. Yes, horrible as it was, but I'm here and to say this and now that I apologize for what my father and his father did. Just like, you know, it has to go a lot further than that, though. There is not going to be any Holocaust to Jews if they came forward and did this. Quite the opposite. It might make this world a better place to live if they came forth and did this and admitted the things that are going on right now. But they've got to stop with other things. They've got to stop this. Jews hate Iranians. They hate Palestinians. They hate Syrians. They hate Arabs. They hate Putin. Now they hate Russians, and they hate Germans and Poles, and they hate white people who want to be proud of their race, and they hate people who want to own guns. They hate
themselves even, too.
Well, they hate white people who want to keep illegals out of America and out of Europe. They hate white people who want to remain white. And that stuff has got to stop, too. They hate just about everybody. If there's going to be less anti-Semitism in the world, there's got to be less Jewish hate in the world. Because they've got to stop with this menu of hatred they've got going on in the world. The world is turning against them and Israel. That's, you know, this Gaza slaughter fest that we were witness to a few months back. The world watched while those people were eating popcorn and laughing at the targeted children in schools and hospitals. That they commit a few more blunders like that, and there will be some tremendous anti-Semitism. They've got to stop. The ghouls who are running Israel and IPAC here in America have got to stop. The people, I guess it's sort of like this. They say, yes, we'd like to stop it. Righteous Jews, I'm saying. Why can't we stop it? Why can't we, Deanna and Kyle and Tom, why can't we stop the direction that America is going right now? We can no more stop that than we could stop a forest fire with a thimble of water. We can gripe and complain on programs like this, but America's foreign policy is not America's foreign policy anymore. We all know that. It's Israel's foreign policy. Why can't we turn that thing around? Why can't we? Because we have no power. Our votes don't count. Let's face it. Our Congress is no more our Congress than would be a group of trained SEALs.
Sure. And of course, the communications in this country, the programming out of Hollywood and from the television networks that are all monopoly owned by the very same people that we're talking about, and certainly they are not going to they're not going to rebroadcast this program on all of the networks tonight during the prime time. This is something that that they have got going for themselves, and the majority of the people believe what they hear. Oh, certainly there are many, many people in America who do not trust politicians, but they believe in the Holocaust because it has been a part of the educational system, because it has because for one thing, the Jewish people were the first, along with their lackeys Eisenhower and all of the journalists that he brought into the camps, to say, oh gosh, look what the Germans did, and so they got kind of a head start. It took us 40 years to catch up and say, now wait a minute, this really didn't happen the way that you have been taught that it happened. So they have a 40, 50 year start on the truth, and of course then they institutionalized it with the Holocaust Commission, and now it's a part of the educational system from grade school up, and so we are kind of running behind, and we have to catch up, and with programs like this, or programs that films like what Kyle is making, we have Dennis Wise, who is making great films. We have Eric Hunt, who is making great films, and at great cost. Not financially, but at great cost. Eric lived in his car for several years, there's a cost to telling the truth.
Yeah, he was ostracized by his, friends.
Absolutely.
And family, and this
Absolutely.
Happens to everybody, like us, who goes after the truth with without any regard for what is politically correct, and it's not an easy thing to do. But once you know the truth, if you don't do something with it, if you don't try to really get it out there, then I think you're honestly even more complicit than the people who are called the sheeple, because you know what happened in history, you know what's going on today, but because you're too scared of the consequences, you're going to let it continue to happen. You're going to let the lies continue to be put out there. What I find very interesting and somewhat disturbing is that there are these people in the alternative media who will say, oh yeah, the media lies about this, that, this is a hoax, that's a hoax. But then they won't be able to connect the dots and see that the Holocaust is a complete lie, that the Republicans and the Democrats will both agree that the Holocaust happened, that it was the greatest travesty to ever, happen on the face of the earth. But these people say, oh, the Republicans and the Democrats, they're complete, they're shills, they're wrong, they're controlled by the NWO. But yeah, they're right on that. They've got that right on the money. The media lies about everything except, all those Holocaust documentaries and the Holocaust movies that are made, Schindler's List and all the rest. It's that's actually the truth. A broken clock can be right twice a day, they'll say. It's really disturbing. It makes me think that many of these people are not honest truth seekers. But
I've often said on my program and elsewhere that if you're looking for the truth, if you're really looking under all the rocks, there is absolutely no way that you're not going to run into the truth if you're really seeking the truth. But the people who are pretend seekers are just that. They are propagandists. They are worse than the people who aren't searching, I think.
You know, also, let's face it, I came from a working class background, and I know what it takes to put food on the table, to work 5 days a week. And a lot of the folks, quite honestly, they work so hard that they don't have much time in their life
exactly.
to do the things we're doing. And it's unfortunate because having worked myself with my back, about the only thing you want to do when you get off work is have some beer, watch some sports, and go to bed. There's not much time for anything else. Now, I think Kyle, when he's talking about the folks that are complicit, yes, these people still are not, there is still no excuse for this because it's happening to them as well. But the ones who do find time in their life to explore, to search, to be curious, and then do nothing with that knowledge that they find, yes, Kyle's right. They're no better than an accessory to the crime. Because they continue to muddle along knowing the truth but don't do a damn thing. There are many ways you can do to fight for the truth. You don't have to be on radio programs like this or host your own program or make films or write books. There's a lot of things you can do, valuable, important things that you can do. If you don't have any talent, you've got money. Give money to people like Deanna so she can stay on the radio and keep people like us coming on, telling you about things like World War II. If you don't have money, Give some of your time. Go on message boards. And when you see somebody arguing about the slaughter fest going on in the Middle East and why the U.S. is doing such great things in Afghanistan and Iraq, and you don't agree with it, well, combat that thought. Put in your own two cents on this thing. Don't let them get away with this. There are lots of other ways, and if you just sit and think about it, you find out ways you can do this, and yes, you can do it anonymously. In this modern age of the Internet, you don't have to come out and stand on a soapbox at the corner of Fifth and Main anymore and worry about being beaten half to death or thrown in jail or ostracized by your family and friends. You can do it anonymously. You can fight this war. You know, Israel has something called the Hasbara Cyber Warriors. These are paid trolls who go on message boards to create the illusion of reality. Not reality, but to go on with enough numbers, with enough people that are saying, yes, Russia's bad, Putin's bad, we must go to war, speaking as if they're Americans rather than Israelis. You get 100 people on there saying that, and it looks like that's a consensus. Actually, it's not. It's an illusion of Americans saying, yes, we need a good war with Putin to teach us Hitler, this new Hitler. They always use terms like that. If you know what you're looking for, you can spot a Hasbara troll a mile away. But go on message boards and fight these demons who are going on trying to create more war, stoke war in the Middle East and with Russia. There's a lot of things, and again, I seem to always go down the rabbit trails when I'm on your program, Deanna. I get you allow
That's
me free
okay.
rein, and
That's
I take
okay.
off running down this path or not. But yeah, Kyle's right. There, you know, I go back to that old thought I've had about the American Revolution and how only roughly 13% of American colonists were behind the American Revolution. And of that 13%, I think it's like 6 or 7% were actively engaged in that revolution, that is, making ammunition or fighting the battles. And that's very similar to the percentage we have today. The other 87% are off shopping at Walmart or watching football games. Or drinking beer, or they're not doing what we're doing. So let's not be too depressed by those who are still in the pastures, eating the grass, seldom looking up, certainly not looking for a way to escape, because they've always been among us. We should rejoice that we're still roughly 13%, and we've got brains, and we're trying to use them. We have ability, like Kyle. And we're just not going to crawl back under any rocks. We're not going to go back into the shadows, closets. We're going to always be here until finally the truth wins out.
Exactly.
Not necessarily our truth, but the truth. I've said this before, that I really care only about the truth. I can say that with a total conscience that I care only about the truth, even if the truth is something that would
awful.
Be against me. Yeah, that would be... I would admit it. But we've got to have the truth above all, or we're screwed. We're screwed as a people. We're screwed as a species.
Exactly. Well, this is supposed... I'm sorry, yeah. I don't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead. No, go ahead, Deanna.
But this is supposedly a Christian nation, supposedly a nation of very good people, but yet we are a nation of dumbbells. We've been dumbed down by the educational system so that we do not do any kind of critical thinking. We are absolutely influenced by authority figures and it starts when we're very, very young. We are raised with the idea that we should cater to authority figures, and we are not prone to raise our hand in a classroom if we have something that's different to say than what the teacher is trying to get us to understand or to believe. And so it's a whole system that needs to be questioned and corrected, that we need to start thinking. I mean, why all these wars, and why is America always engaged in a war? When, you know, we hear about all these terrible nations, and yet when you look at all of the warfare that America has engaged in for the last, since 1900, you have to wonder. You have to say, how come we're always in a war fighting that has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with America? I mean, seriously, what nation has ever really attacked us other than via a false flag operation that was designed in Washington and London?
The interesting thing is that the justification for going to war against Germany that is given in the history books is always about the invasion of Poland. Now, we know more about what happened there with the ethnic Poles being brutalized and how Hitler's hand was basically forced and how England was basically allowing Poland to have all this hubris by saying, oh, we'll back you up if Germany invades, and they didn't. And we know that the Soviet Union also invaded Poland, and they invaded Finland, and we didn't go to war against Uncle Joe. But think about this. Starting a whole world war based on a nation invading another, that's the precedent that was set there. What has America done time and again since World War II? Over and over and over again, overthrowing governments here, overthrowing governments there, invading with almost no justification. Or if there is justification, it's made-up weapons of mass destruction. It's incredible.
Exactly. And they've been doing it for a very, very long time, since the war against Mexico, actually. And it's always been because of a false flag. And it's the very same people who initiated those kinds of warfare. It's always been about resource seizure. And certainly Germany, the leaders in Germany prior to World War II, had thrown those people out of office, had thrown the bankers out, had discovered that the people are the important people. They didn't have any gold. They had the productivity of the people, and they built their country up after World War I without relying on credit, without relying on gold, without relying on loans from the bankers. And they just couldn't stand having that happen. That is the real reason that they went after Germany, to prevent other countries in Europe from following suit and relying on their people, building up their country, and respecting the citizens of their country, and not exploiting them, not lying to them. And that's really why Germany was a target.
Until we get control of our country, and we do not have control of it now. We're Americans living in an occupied nation.
Absolutely.
We're going to be at war with peace forever unless we get control of our country, our government. When I say our government, I don't mean our government. I mean the U.S. government. It's not our government anymore. Well, you know, you could look around if you just are curious. Why, okay, we're in the middle of college bowl season, I suppose, and why is it that we must always have Air Force flyovers, or why is it that we must always have soldiers and sailors and airmen marching in with the flag at sporting events? Why do these people have a corner on patriotism? Why not bricklayers, housewives, school teachers, radio hosts, filmmakers? Why can't they bring in the flag once in a while? The answer, of course, is that we have been usurped. We have been usurped by militarism.
Right. Well,
Jewish militarism, whatever it is, we will always find a reason to be fighting somebody. That's the nature of it. People may not get it. Let me ask you this. When was the last time you have heard this expression at Christmas time, peace on earth and goodwill to men? And I'm not talking about the movies or the music, excuse me, that you hear recordings of. Peace on earth, goodwill toward men. I don't see that anymore. I used to see it all the time as a kid. And I'm sure they didn't mean it even back then, but at least they said it. Peace on earth, goodwill to men. It's not that anymore. This is about killing Afghanistans, Iranians, Iraqis, ISIS. It's about killing and slaughter. And until we get control, I'm sorry, but that's the way it's going to be. And you watch these, well, there's military channel. There's almost a Hitler channel right now about the evil Nazis and UFOs and weird stuff, just strange stuff. Things to keep us groomed, primed for war. The ridiculous, absurd, and obscene commercials for these military enlistments. The few, the proud, the Marines, spoken of this.
And the Wounded Warrior Project.
Don't be fighting and we won't have any wounded warriors. To have
exactly.
Project 4, stop the wars. Stop, and we can stop the crippleization of Americans. Join a force for good, the U.S. Navy, a force for good, right? It depends on what part of the missile, a Sidewinder missile, you're on, whether you're good or not. Support the troops. Support
sure.
the troops. Why in the hell should we support them more than school teachers or firemen or sanitation workers? Support the troops. I'm not supporting anybody 5,000 miles away killing some goat herd, some shepherd who's done nothing, absolutely
exactly.
nothing. I'm sorry, but we're in a militarized nation right now, a camp, if you will. It's all
exactly.
about military. It's all about killing people. It's all about a perpetual state of war. And
exactly.
most people simply don't get it because they're watching the sports and they're doing
well, that has been militarized. The Boy Scouts are militarized. We are militarized the minute we set foot in a government school. A government school, you know, sponsored by the government that takes the nation into war. In a government school, you are going to be militarized. You are going to be taught the glorification of war through the government's version of history, the history of all the wars. They're going to glorify war. The Boy Scouts are taught to earn merit badges and to wear uniforms and to get accolades for doing certain things. Look at sports. You have the uniforms and the
mm-hmm.
militarization
right.
of sports because they use military terms. Oh, our team is going to beat that team. And so that is the perfect environment to militarize people is through the sports.
Well, look here, Deanna. Just the other day on TV was the Military Bowl, in which two teams were playing each other, the Military Bowl. Then there was the Lockheed Martin Bowl, if you can believe that. Then why not the Enhanced Interrogation Bowl or the Shock and Awe Bowl? I don't think anybody would raise any eyebrows over that either. Can
right.
you believe it? I mean, it's you know, and something else right now, the neocons, I would bet that not one in 50 Americans could define a neocon if they were asked.
Of course not.
I mean, we can, of course, but I would bet if you asked them, they'd say, I don't know, there's something to do with new and something to do with conservative. Well, we're all of the same. Maybe Kyle's too young for this, but you and I, Deanna, we remember the 60s. We remember these greasy, vulgar hairballs that were out there leading these violent protests against the U.S. war in Vietnam and, incidentally, fighting communism. That's where these people were coming from. Well, those same people, these radical leftists who were actually Marxists, who opposed the wars against communism, are now our neoconservatives, and they're all for wars that are attacking Muslims in the Middle East. These are Jews, basically. People like Jerry Rubin, Abby Hoffman, Bella Abzug, Betty Friedan, and Gloria Steinem, people like that, were loud, obnoxious people in the Cultural Revolution here in this country. Well, these people now are wearing suits, or children, perhaps. But these are the neoconservatives who never met a war in the Middle East they didn't like, that they didn't pressure the U.S. Congress to vote for. That basically right now, Kyle, correct me if I'm wrong, but IPAC and the so-called neoconservatives that infest the American government, these are the people that are keeping us in this perpetual state of war. Now, I've got to believe that when we don't have a Middle East war, we'll find another war somewhere. For instance, invading Panama, invading Grenada, invading these islands that are in the Caribbean, finding somebody to invade. I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's the project for a new American century. That's what we're seeing unfold before us.
Mm-hmm.
The plan set up by the neocons.
That started before. I mean, look at all the military bases we have all over the world. And the real anti-war movement was co-opted in the 60s by these very people. And they what they really did was discredit the real people who were against warfare. Some of the people in the colleges who were against warfare that were not Marxist, the Marxists came in and co-opted them, just as they did in other countries. The co-option of any anti-war group, and we saw it in Russia, where there were people against war. Well, you just take them over. And it only takes a few people, 200 people, where Russia is concerned, to take over the whole country and to, just to eliminate the people who disagree with you.
You know, Deanna, you brought up that point about this Wounded Warriors Project, and that truly is a horrible commercial to see. I think we're talking about the same one where they're leading that poor man around.
Gosh.
And his wife is just, you can tell she's on the verge of collapse, even as this commercial is playing.
Exactly.
Well, I hate that, too. I hate that. I hate any corrupt regime that would send these kids off to do that stuff. Basically, we're talking 18 to 25-year-olds haven't got a thought in their head.
Exactly.
Haven't got a thought in their head. They think they're doing good work, that they're super patriots. They have no idea what they're doing. But then they come back looking like this, or with legs missing. And
exactly.
Yes, we can avoid
the Wounded Warrior Project
by stopping the wars.
They ought to be here fighting the real enemy.
Yes.
But when they come home, they're totally disabled. So you have to wonder, okay, is there another alternative reason to send the youth, the strength of this country, into foreign countries where they can have their legs shot off or something else, and then they come home completely unable to defend their country against the real enemies, the internal enemies?
Well, even if they are physically still all together, you've got people like Barbara Boxer who say that they're psychologically too wounded. While they were over there in the Middle East killing whoever, sure, they can use whatever kind of weaponry is at their disposal. They're perfectly fine to kill, kill, kill. But when they get home, they're psychologically disabled and they shouldn't be allowed to own a weapon.
Right. And
so
some of them are psychologically disabled because of all the psych drugs that the Pentagon, the Department of Defense, gives to them. The Department of Defense is one of the greatest buyers, consumers of all of these psych drugs. They destroy them mentally and physically.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And it's all big business, too. The Marxists, the communists today, don't realize what happened in the Bolshevik takeover of Russia, where you had the American money powers, the Jewish money powers, financing it and getting returns, tenfold on their investment. That was big money taking that country apart and looting it and it was not what it's cracked up to be. Workers of the world unite, and these are just useful idiots for these people who are extreme capitalists while also funding communism. It's just a big charade, in my opinion.
Sure.
And today, it's all still big business. You know, we've got people in America starving, homeless. You've got tech cities still. We're still in the Depression, but you're not going to really get that from watching the TV. And yet, how much does it cost to just drop one bomb somewhere in the Middle East? The total costs for dropping one bomb are incredible. It's in the millions of dollars just to drop one bomb because of all the materials that go into building that bomb, the explosives, flying the aircraft, all the gas for that, all the support personnel, paying the pilot, paying the people who are watching that pilot, and all the other equipment that goes into it. And we could just be done with all of that in an instant.
Exactly.
And be recovering and be taking care of our own people. And instead of spending all this money for the Iron Dome in Israel, we could care for our own people here at home. We could protect the people in the United States from invasion, you know, instead of instigating it on the southern border. It's just a travesty what's going on. And hopefully some of these veterans who have been used and abused will wake up and they'll stop buying into it after they've seen the reality firsthand.
Exactly. Let me just mention, if any of our listeners have questions or comments they'd like to contribute, please feel free to call in 646-787-1915, and we'd love to hear from you. And I've kind of been monitoring the chat room, lots of comments there. But anyway, this movie, getting back to the movie, I think that educational effort, and bless your heart, Kyle, we need more people like you, more people like Thomas, more people like Wayne in Canada, people.
The good news is, Deanna, I think we're getting more people. I'm not naming names, but I could tell you in the last couple of years, I have met some of the most intelligent, bright, talented people that America and the world has to offer. And it's incredible, and they're on our side. They're coming over. I won't mention them or what they're doing, but let me say this. They're extremely talented, extremely knowledgeable. They're on our side. Some of them cannot come right out and say, hey, here I am. I'm Superman. I'm formerly Clark Kent. I'm coming out of this phone booth right now. They can't do that because of where they're at. But no, people, thank goodness, the people with the best genetic material in them are seeing what's going on right now, and they're basically taking sides. It's the side of morality over just money or monetary value. They're basically saying that, you know, this isn't enough now, the money and the fame and the that they've made. I've got to cross that line in the sand and take a stand with my fellows. And this is going on right now, and I mean, I am extremely confident in what we're doing and what's going to happen. We are winning. It doesn't seem like that now to a lot of folks because time doesn't work that way. It doesn't it's seldom. Seldom is there a Iron Curtain moment where the wall comes down in one fell swoop like that. But I'm not saying it cannot happen in our movement. But I'm saying it probably won't. It's going to take years, but it will happen because basically people are choosing sides right now. Even those right now who are listening to us are saying and agreeing with what we're saying. At some point, it is going to happen. I hope sooner than later, and so does Kyle. But it will happen because the truth cannot be held down. People like Kyle keep popping up. You just can't kill us off quick enough. We just keep popping up. And so,
and it's, it's wonderful that the younger generation, because many of these people are, well, like Eric Hunt, he's a young person. Kyle's a young person. And these people are the ones that are coming forward and doing this great work. Somebody in the chat room said, we should have a showing at the local library. And I think with films like yours, Kyle, think of how that would impact people to go and watch something like that. I remember a few years back that somebody from the local Holocaust Museum came up to, actually came down to the community library that I'm close to, and they had this this big meeting where they had a Holocaust survivor come in and talk about her experiences, and there were at least, I would have to say, 150 people there, and they had brought in a water bottle, water to drink, and it was well advertised, and they had snack food, and there was, there was only one person that actually raised his hand and said, well, wait a minute, and he was a Muslim, and he said he wanted to ask a question that refuted what the presenter was saying, and my goodness, he was almost booed out of the room. But I think that we need to take a chance, that we need to start sharing these films with our friends and our family and at the local library if we can. Because the libraries are paid for by taxpayers, okay? And they have an obligation to accept not only the presenter who wants to present about the Holocaust, but they have an obligation to present accurate history and to counter some of the propaganda that we have all lived under for such a long time.
I think that's a great idea.
Your movie presented in local libraries.
I'm not going to get into any details right now because it's still a little bit up in the air, but there is a gentleman with some finances who is looking to put on a film festival where Hellstorm will be one of the main films that is presented, and he wants to make it pretty big, and it could garner some real media attention. And his approach is that he wants to first bring it to the local Holocaust museum or wherever they do these presentations and say, you know, are you willing to show this? And of course they'll say no. And then the idea is to book a venue right across the street or as close as possible to then hold it there. And if people out there are listening and they want to get involved in setting up screenings, it's not too early to start. You can even try a test run with the preview that has been put forth. Try to do this in some kind of public venue. And if you don't want to do it in a public venue yet, you know what? Set up a private screening at your own home. Invite some people over. Give them a little presentation beforehand and say, listen, this is pretty disturbing material that I'm going to ask you to watch, but I want you to sit through this 12 minutes, and then we can discuss it afterwards. And, you know, friends and family, perhaps they'll start to see things in a little bit different of light, and you can get them to spread it around and do whatever it takes to just get this information out there. You know, some people might say, well, how is it really going to change the world today? You know, this was so 70-plus years ago. But I think that the material is still very relevant, and it is so crucial to changing people's worldviews. And we need a complete change in worldview so we can move forward into a better future, because the worldview we have right now is completely Jewish. It's anti-German and pro-Jewish.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We do have some callers. Let's take a call. And think about this, as suggested in the chat room. What if every church in America decided to show this to their congregation. Wow. Okay, let's take this caller. 304,
yeah,
go
hi.
Ahead.
Yeah, hi, Deanna. This is Kent from West Virginia.
I knew it was.
First thing about the German accent. Well, there's always Henry Kissinger, you know.
Oh,
you were looking
gosh.
For a German accent. And it'd be great if you somehow, if you had like a narration and you had somebody who could affect sort of a semi-legitimate Henry Kissinger style accent. I don't know whether that'd be more comic than it would be effective. But I had an interesting discussion the other day with a fellow I know. He's very religious, you know, but he always talks about, I was talking about the Jews, and he said, well, he's coming from the point, he likes listening to NPR, and it's always the secular Jews and all this, you know, and all this stuff. And so I talked to him about it. And his father had been a pretty high-ranking Mason, and then he saw something about it he didn't like, so he quit. But he was against Israel because he had been over there as a naval officer one time, and he was shot at by the Jews. But we were talking, and I said, now, do you believe in 6 million? He said, yes, I do. And we got into a big, long discussion about that, and I said, well, how can it be 6 million? And he said, he got very adversarial, and he said, well, you're on the internet now. Why don't you get on there and disprove it? Get on there and disprove it. You're on the internet. There's nothing wrong with me. And I said, wait a minute. You prove 6 million. I don't have to disprove 6 million. I'm not making a claim. You've got, and then he sort of shut up. He backed off. So yeah, I mean, there was like prove me wrong. It's prove you're right. You know, they can't prove it. And then he got into he read some books. You know, he read a lot of books. And there was a camp, a crematorium with a huge chimney. Book said there was a huge chimney. I said, well, how big's huge? Like down on the river where the electric plant, I mean, how big's huge? It's bigger than a chimney on your house. And he said, well, there's a town up the road with 500 people, and they got a funeral parlor and cemetery. Well, you know, the camp's got thousands of people. And so, I mean, it just, like, I could not believe how he realizes the problem, he can't break through that propaganda that's, you know, been instilled in him.
Too much work. It's too much work for people. I had an uncle I loved very much. When I told him about this book that I was working on, Hellstorm, what happened to the Germans, his only comment was they got exactly what they deserved.
Wow.
It was too much work for him to read either this book or other books that are out there now about what we did to Germany. It was easier to believe that propaganda. It's in his head, and it's not going anywhere. Because I got to tell you, this uncle, if he could have seen what happened, he wouldn't have said that. But it's like your friend. It's easier to agree with the 6 million thing. I don't know what to do with people like that, quite honestly. These are precisely the cattle I was talking about. That will always be out in that pasture, always grazing on that green grass, and never look up. I would not waste another moment on somebody. I would not another moment, not a millisecond, on these people who regurgitate the same standard refrain over and over, whether it be about 6 million or whether it be about the only good German's a dead German. They're not really worth it. These are not the people with the curiosity gene or the truth gene or the justice gene that we apparently have and they don't. These are the producers and consumers and begetters and the ones who watch the sports, who sleep, who screw, who beget more people just like them. So let's just let these people go. I would spend more time on myself or somebody who really does care. I know you didn't call in. Your name is Paul?
No, Kent.
Kent, I'm sorry, Kent.
Yeah.
But I think you understand what I'm saying. I ran across the same thing, and it's sort of like this. It's like carving out a wooden rifle to take to a real war. If you even could convince somebody like this, who has believed this, these lies, so what? The first standard refrain that comes along again, they'll say that. And so on and on and on until they're just not the type of people who, well, it's they're the reason propaganda is propaganda, because these people, it's easier to believe something that everybody else believes in. No one wants to get out of step.
It's very frustrating, because I've talked to him, and like I said, if I were to talk to him a month from now, he would not remember the discussion, and he would be back on the same square. And so, yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. It's just beating a dead horse. So.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah. He'll talk about NPR and this and that, but he says, we won't transgress, you know, won't go beyond that. So. Well, I was hoping so.
It's probably best if, once you do find someone that is open, receptive to such thoughts, to work on them and to give them the knowledge, spread it around with them, and then work on it and improve. You know, I get this question quite often. I know Kyle does too, and Deanna probably does too as well. What can they do? They ask, what can we do? I mentioned this earlier. They don't have any talent. They don't have any money. There's lots of things you can do. Start with yourself. Create the best possible paragon that you possibly can, mentally, spiritually, physically. Become a symbol. Become something that your children or your neighbors can look up to. And then when you question authority, as Kent has done before, I'm sure, then it really gives it some stuff, some substance. In other words, people gravitate toward strength. And when you're exuding strength, and then it's much easier to convince people. It's a fact. I won't name any names, but there's some folks that have knowledge, but they lack the strength. They lack the mental, moral, physical, spiritual strength. And so start with yourself and your family, and then it works. You know, I'm really going down a lot of trails today. I don't know if
that's
I'm even
right,
making
huh?
sense. It sounds like I'm almost drunk. I'm not even close to being drunk. I haven't had anything to drink for days, weeks. But, rather than try to drag along the people that we all know so well that have no curiosity gene, I'd say let them go. Forget it. You're never going to win that battle. The best you can do is just wear out yourself. So work on yourself and then friends and family.
That's right. I felt exhausted after that.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks a lot, Deanna.
All righty. Thank you for your call. All righty. Let's take 111. 111, you have a question or comment?
Yes, I was wondering, have either of you gentlemen happened to see the film Inglourious Basterds? It's a spiritual allegory. I don't think you might not appreciate it unless you really have some understanding of Jewish suffering.
Russ, do you have a legitimate question for either of the gentlemen?
Yes, I believe it's a legitimate question. I'm wondering whether either of these gentlemen have seen that film. The name of the film is called Inglourious Basterds.
Russ still calls into your show. I used to get Russ calling into my show back when I was on Oracle. I can't believe he's still around.
To answer his question, I have not, Russ. I have not seen the movie, nor will I. But
all righty. Well, thanks, Russ, for calling in.
But, Deanna, just for the sake of curiosity, was it because of something the movie had that was relevant or that was persuasive? I don't know much about it, except that, of course, it's a Hollywood film and it's got to be German.
I have no idea. I wouldn't see it. I would never dream of going to see it. Go ahead, Kyle.
Clips of it. It's just it's basically Jewish propaganda taken to an extreme, where you've got people like Brad Pitt, you know, who Americans just love. People around the world love him, going and torturing evil Nazis. And I think Eli Roth is also in it. It's directed by Quentin Tarantino. Eli Roth is the person who is a Jew who came up with the genre of torture porn movies,
really?
Which, you know, mixes torture with sex. And you can see, obviously, that this train of thought goes back all the way to World War II as well, and what the Jews were doing then. Now they're just making, they're trying to put their mindset, put their sick desires into the minds of all of the goyim, as well as what they call us. Yeah, don't take Russ's calls too seriously, though, Tom.
Oh, I do.
Okay.
I don't think too many people do, but
let me say this. Let me throw in a little bit of history here that I do mention in my book Hellstorm. Americans like to think they won World War II. I've got to tell them this about their fathers and grandfathers. A German was captured as soon as, very shortly after D-Day. A German was captured who had been in North Africa. And the American interrogator was asking him a question and said, what do you think of American soldiers as fighting men? And the German refused to answer. And then finally he was persuaded to comment, knowing they were promising not to beat him up, no matter what he said. And he said, okay, since you really want to know the truth, I'll tell you the truth. We look at you as you look at Italians. In other words, the Americans, as soon as they fired a bullet in anger in Italy or in North Africa, Italians would surrender by the hundreds of thousands. They just weren't good fighting men at that time. And so the Americans like to think that we won that war, but every time on every battlefield in the West, on the Western Front, that the numbers approached anything of a similar size, the results were always the same. For instance, the Battle of the Bulge, that was a stampede, and that was a very small, relatively speaking, force of Germans that fought the Battle of the Bulge. But they stampeded the Americans, and had it not been for that break in the weather, which allowed the American air superiority to take back over, they would have ran them guys all the way back to England. I'm telling you that right now. Even while they were holding off this enormous army of the Soviet Union, that was always the A-team that were over there trying to hold the Bolsheviks back. It was always the B-team on the Western Front. And so for these idiotic movies showing Americans actually chasing Germans around battlefields, I'll tell you what, that just isn't the way it played out. The Germans were more than a match for Americans. Americans had this predilection for wasting everything in sight, and it carried on over, and probably to this very day, but I know for a fact it carried on over into Vietnam and Korea. Whenever somebody might open fire on them, let's say a sniper from half a mile away, the Americans would immediately open up with everything they had, shooting everything, trees, animals, anything that was moving, just wasting ammunition, of course. And that's what happened in World War II. You couldn't get Americans to move forward. Once there was a little bit of resistance, it was either air support, artillery, or just this enormous rounds of ammunition being fired off. I'm not saying Americans were cowards. I'm just saying Americans at that time really, I'll tell you what, they didn't, as Eisenhower said, they didn't know what they were fighting for and didn't know what they were fighting against. Now, Japan, it was a different thing. They believed the December the 7th infamy, Day of Infamy propaganda, and the Japanese being monkeys, evil devils, whatever, and it was easy to hate them and go do terrible things to them. But it wasn't that way on the Western Front. And so for people to make movies showing heroic Brad Pitts on tanks, just rolling over the Wehrmacht, even the B-team, is just joking. That's pure fantasy.
Indeed. And we do have to remember that Germany was fighting on two different fronts.
Three.
And, yes.
The Italian front was also a
front. Right. And that that they had a discipline and a character about them. For instance, of course, you talk a lot in your book, and you will be showing a lot about rape in your movie, Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
If Germany had acted in the same way against the women of other countries, they would have been immediately eliminated by their superiors. Germans did not act like that. Certainly you had isolated cases, but Germans did not treat women in the same cruel manner that the people, the Ilya Ehrenberg type who came out and said, you know, rape everybody, kill everybody, anybody that's 8 or 80, rape them. The Germans were told they had a different value system. They implemented that value system. They would never have done to foreign women what was done to their women, ever. Never would have considered it. And had,
those lies are out there, though. People claim that Germans got just what they deserved because Germans had done that to the women of the Soviet Union. They had raped and pillaged. Yeah, then that's completely false, as you're saying. But that's one of the justifications that's given, is that they just got payback and they couldn't deal with it.
It was the partisans that participated, partisans that were dressed in German uniforms that were perpetuating that kind of myth in the East. They were not Germans, but partisans. And that was a myth, the same myth that... Ehrenberg perpetuated about what they would do to Germany.
When
it was all
war,
propaganda.
Yes, and when you win a war, you write the history, and you can say anything
exactly.
you want against the defeated victim. You can say anything, and in fact, they did say anything. What they did was basically project their own crimes on the Germans afterwards. I agree. It was like one comment in the book by a German soldier. He said... No, we were not allowed to molest women in any way whatsoever. He said, but we've sure learned in this war now. You know, if we ever get the upper hand again, I guess we can just forget about all rules of law. But no, he was talking about, I think, France originally, Paris, and they weren't, the guys who did do this. And yes, you've got these the miscreants in every army. But, they were dealt with quickly. Quick trial, quick death, that's it. They don't want... Germans' discipline was the iron backbone. There is accounts of, as they were fighting, one soldier said, late in the war, and they're up trying to defend these shrinking beachheads where the civilians are trying to escape the Red Army, and the German remainder of the German army that's fighting up there are holding the lines against these overwhelming odds. I mean, overwhelming. And one soldier said, you know, I always hated that discipline when I was going through it, basic training, and early on, he says, but now it was like a warm, soothing, comforting blanket, this discipline. And when they say discipline, they mean discipline. They have rules and laws. I agree with Kyle. It's to call Germans and basically say what we did was okay because the Germans did it. That's BS, bogus. I mean, it's...
Exactly.
And they didn't rape any of the Jewish women or women in general that were in the concentration
in the camps. No, never.
Despite some of the propaganda movies and the semi-pornographic ones that were put out later. I forget the name of it, but Elsa the something, where you have a German woman who's raping Jewish men in concentration camps. It's all just Jewish disgusting propaganda. But what happened when those camps were liberated by the Soviets is a different story. Those Soviets who were unleashed upon Germany didn't care about whether or not these women were part of the war effort or not, or whether or not they were even really German. They were raping anything in sight. That's one of the accounts I came across when looking through all of these video testimonials was about a woman who was in Auschwitz and was liberated from Auschwitz by the Soviets, and they just raped her along with everybody else. That they didn't care. She said, she was trying to, say, hey, I'm not German, I'm Jewish. They didn't care. These were absolute monsters who were running over Germany.
Absolutely.
And nothing like the Germans. To even compare them is just a historical inaccuracy, to say the least. Perhaps some Russian soldiers on the front lines, as Tom likes to make a distinction in the book, did actually have some honor, were actually good soldiers, did have some some respect for themselves and for their enemies, but it seems the vast majority were just pretty much scum at that point and brainwashed.
Sure, and many of those Russians, many Russians actually joined the Germans to fight against the communists.
Yeah, that's true. That's something a lot of folks don't know anything about. Well, let me say this: by the same token, a lot of folks don't appreciate the fact that the Waffen-SS were international fighters. They weren't Germans. Correct me if I'm wrong, Kyle. I don't want to overstep the bounds here. But this was a European attempt to stop Bolshevism. World War II. And, for instance, some of the last people, Americans like to make fun of the French as surrender monkeys and worse things than that. Fact is, some of the last people to surrender were French Waffen-SS. Right around the Reich Chancellery, as the Russians were moving in, there is a terrible scene right at the end, a very small passage, as Kyle knows, about a dozen young French Waffen-SS are captured by the French Free Forces and under General Leclerc. And the general makes a comment about these soldiers. He says, "What are you doing in German uniform?" He does that very sarcastically. "How dare you appear in front of me in German uniform?" And one of the young guys, probably about 16, said, "General, you look pretty snappy in your American uniform." And Leclerc, with a wave of the hand, ordered them executed on the spot. And instead of taking blindfolds, not a one of them did. And they stood there like men to the end. By the way, I'm part French, too, and so maybe I get a little upset by the Americans trying to make the French into some sort of cowardly, unworthy type people. Well, let me say this. Anybody who had Germany for a neighbor, and Germany's been very militaristic, too, by the way, I think you should be. I mean, in other words, had America been on Germany's border in World War II, America would have lost also. That's a fact. I mean, Germany was on the verge of basically defeating Russia, America, and England all in one fell swoop. But anyway, the Spaniards, the Letts, the Latvians, the Dutch, the Danes, the Norwegians, the Spanish, the Italians, they were fighting in the Waffen-SS. Well, not the Italians. They had their own army down there. But other peoples throughout Europe joined the Waffen-SS to fight against communism. And
right.
Not too many people know about that. But the Russians, yes, surrendered by the hundreds of thousands and were led by people like Vlaslav, who formed his own army that fought with the Germans against the communists. They hated it so much. And then, of course, at the end of the war, the Americans and British had
sent them back to their death.
Sent them back, yes. Sent them all back to their death, including many others that had nothing to do with the war.
I just want to comment upon France for a moment here. Recently, an article did come out that was, I forget, maybe it was in The Guardian or something, where it had all of these pictures of Nazi-occupied France, and it was just beautiful. It looked like an incredibly thriving society that was taking place under that evil Nazi boot. And a totally different picture than we usually get. And so a lot of people in France did sympathize with the Germans, and they were treated very, very harshly after that war came to a close. I've seen some pictures, and we're not going to really get into this in the film, but of French women who had been sympathizing with the Germans, who had their heads shaved, they were made to wear swastikas, not carved into them like was the case in some other places in Germany, but these French women were just brutalized, abused, beaten, and humiliated for sympathizing with the Germans after the Germans were driven out of France.
Yeah,
right.
Something like an estimate of 100,000 French were killed in the liberation of of France. I don't mean those that were killed in the bombings, the American and British bombings. These are the ones that were captured by the French communists, the French socialists, and some of the Free French Forces, so-called, and just executed on the spot because of purported backing of the German occupation troops. There are so many facets of World War II that need exploration, that need books, need films, that initially people, movies like Kyle's are going to come out, and are going to be, it's going to be dismissed by so many people because it flies in the face of 70 years of hardcore propaganda. It's going to seem like Martians have landed, a film like Kyle's. It's going to seem so strange and surreal that how dare they make a lying piece of filth like this film is. It can't be true. It's impossible. And that's going to be the initial reaction by those who do acknowledge its existence, I should say. But it's going to take more than one film, more than one book. It's going to take a generation, basically, to come around and not only agree with what's in the book or the movie, but to add to it, to take it a step further until it becomes a standard history again. Instead of nothing but propaganda that's we've been fed. You know, I'm also working very slowly on a book about Japan, and the same thing was going on over in the Far Eastern theater against Japan.
Oh, absolutely.
In many ways, it was just a mirror of what was going on in Germany.
And you brought up France. When the Americans arrived in France, there was all kinds of rape and exploitation of women, and it was actually encouraged by the military leaders that they would go into France. It was kind of like, okay, you've got to be submissive. And this whole idea of submission by the American military of French women was pretty disgusting. And, of course, that also occurred in Japan, where you had a lot of rapes and exploitation of women. And you were dealing with a society that was didn't have enough food, didn't have enough supplies, and there are books coming out about this situation. And so the American military was maybe not as bad as the Soviet military as far as rape, but they were certainly doing it.
They may have done it. They may have done it to the full extent as the Russians did, Deanna. We just did a better job covering it up. There are lots of signposts pointing that the Americans, as one sergeant put it, were also an army of rapists.
Yes,
that was in Germany and France, as you point out. They damn sure were in Japan, because I do have more than enough information on that, of the rapes starting in Okinawa and then continued all the way up to the main island. But look, when you denigrate a people like American propaganda did, and when you basically tell your soldiers that these are not people you need to respect, they're not even human, then you can do anything you want with them. You can rob, you can loot, you can rape, you can murder, and nobody's going to say no. There were a few token people that were executed. That was for the home consumption back in America, but no, there's lots. In fact, a good book could probably be written on that aspect of the war alone, the part that has been covered up, the American advance through Germany, France and Germany, and then its occupation. It's terrible. The Russians, unfortunately for the Russians, it's common knowledge. We know what they did because so many people talked about it. They were so damn proud about it. Whereas the Americans, of course, covered it up.
But the Americans were supposed to be liberating France. They were our allies. And then the American soldiers go in and start raping the French women.
Yeah.
I mean, that
When you have the power of the media at your control, then you can say anything you want. Yeah, Americans liberated Iraq. There was nothing going on bad there until a few photographs slipped out, the Abu Ghraib and people being raped in the streets of Baghdad. Anybody who thinks war is a fun, beautiful thing, they need to have some serious attitude adjustment, because war, when you unleash the basest instincts in man, that's what you're going to get, is rape, murder, torture. The worst side of mankind seems to be unleashed in war. Yeah, that's where the sadists have almost a license to be a sadist. They can suddenly come out, and it's almost a virtue what they do now.
Sure.
Chop off a German's head or boil a Japanese skull down to make a ashtray out of, which they did.
Sure.
In fact, it was going on all over the place there. And they're still among us. These are the ones that are running around right now being serial killers or serial rapists. They're always among us. But when war pops up, sure, they get to go do what they want to do and what they do best.
Sure. Because their government, their authority figure, has given them permission to act like this.
Yes, precisely.
Despite their values that they grew up with, despite what they personally believe, if you get authority, permission to go and act like an animal and brutalize other people, then you're going to do it if you don't have any personal values that you would say, no, I refuse to do this. And the American military does have the power to refuse to follow orders from their superiors, but they just don't understand that they do.
You know, the recent torture report is very appalling, to say the least. And whereas the Soviets were raping women in front of their little boys, you know, their little children, in the current day and age, Americans, it seems, are raping boys in front of their mothers. They're training dogs to rape their prisoners as part of their torture. So they're using dogs to rape their prisoners. This is what we have sunk to. This goes to show exactly who won World War II, and that they haven't let up in the least. They've even enhanced their torture. That they've refined their techniques. They've found that they can get away with even more these days, and it's just so sickening to see. And that's another reason that this film is so relevant to the present day, because the same kinds of things are taking place, and perhaps they've even gotten worse in some regards. Just they're not being done on the same scale, because there's not a worldwide conflict yet. But I can assure you, if they're able to get this World War III going, it will make World War II look like child's play.
Indeed. All righty. We are just about out of time, gentlemen. For information about the film, please visit hellstormdocumentary.com. We've been delighted to have Thomas Goodrich and Kyle Hunt join us today. Thank you so very much for your efforts, the heart that you're both putting into this project. Thank you for doing this. Thank you so much for being on the program today. Good luck. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us.
All righty. Bye-bye. Take care.
It starts with you and me.
It starts with you.
It starts with you and me.